Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just, for me, has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email. This.
I will tell you what. Sometimes with our internet studio that we use, it is just not on target. I was hitting that stop button about 5 or 6 seconds ago, and it just wanted to keep on going. That is the beauty of an internet radio show done by me, Carol the Coach. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets out of Indianapolis, Indiana. So glad to be with you tonight. You know, we do a lot of interesting things on this show. We talk about addiction. We talk about treatment centers. We talk about recovery tools. We really want the show to help you to understand what sexual addiction is all about, whether you be a sexual addiction client or a partner. And I say client because truly, if you have the disorder of sexual addiction, it's important for you to do what it takes to beat this insidious habit. And it's more than a habit. It's an obsession, and it's a compulsion, and you can't do it on your own. And so I'm just a piece of the puzzle to help you work things out, as well as I talk about 12-step groups. I talk about Internet Recovery Nation. I talk about Smart Recovery. I talk about all those support groups that can help you to stay clean. And that's because you develop the fellowship. You typically have a mentor, a coach, or a sponsor, depending on what program you're interested in. And then we talk about all the readings, the great books, everything that can take your life to the next level and help you to get clean. I feel very blessed and honored to do this show, and sometimes I interview clients, sometimes I interview directors of treatment centers, sometimes I interview the founder of sexual addiction, Dr. Patrick Carnes. I mean, literally, I work at getting the experts in the field all over the world to come on the show and help you to understand what you need to do to make your life better. And so oftentimes, we focus on partners because partners are so traumatized. They oftentimes experience post-traumatic stress, and so that's very, very difficult. And when that occurs, I want them to know that there are support groups out there, Essanon, COSA, you know, whether it be telephone meetings, which, of course, if you don't have a group close to you. You can find one online and just Google it or put in saa.org or sa.org. See what comes up. See what you can find for you, but don't put it off. You may ask why. Well, I'm here to tell you. The reason is if you put it off today, it'll be harder to partake in it tomorrow. So when you feel the craving for therapy, for treatment, for support groups, follow that inclination now. And when you do, you'll find that it is well worth the investment of time, energy, and very rarely do the support groups cost money. Usually you just donate a buck or two. So we never let money be the excuse for why you can't get help. Now, if you remember, I said last week, what was just amazing to me is that the fallout of Jared Fogel really affected my life because he was from Indianapolis. And so I did lots of interviews. I found out it was even aired on Dateline, TMZ. I felt, again, so honored to be able to disseminate information in so many different ways. And you heard me say last week, I hope that when Jared gets clean and goes through his time and goes to treatment, allegedly he's there right now, what can happen is that he can be the spokesperson for sexual addiction. Now, you may say, why would anybody want to do that? Well, I got to tell you, there is so much good that can be done when people speak out and talk about what this problem has caused them, their families, their neighborhoods, their work, and it frees you when you can talk about it. I remember when we got trained by Patrick Carnes, he said, be very careful of media because the media doesn't understand this illness and they may try to discredit you. I have never found that to be true. So I'm thinking that from the time Patrick Carnes did this to the time now that I'm doing it, it has really, really made a difference in just the work that they've done to open up the door for me. And I can't thank the founders of this program enough because truly they're getting research to substantiate the facts that we already know. And so, speaking of research, you've heard me talk about it before. If you're a partner of a sex addict and you are in therapy, I'd like for you to partake in this research study. Now, the interviews take about an hour, and they can be done on the phone, so you can call from anywhere. And what you do is you call Christy Rose at 262-705-7745. Now, the only other criteria besides having a sexual addiction is that you need to be participating in a 12-step support group and be in therapy. So hopefully there are plenty of you out there, plenty of partners who are meeting that criteria and can help establish more research. I just think this is a wonderful study. I highly endorse it. And I got to tell you, I got the nicest email last week. And, you know, it was from a listener. And he said, you know, I wanted to drop a line and say how much I enjoy your show. It has been a massive encouragement to me. I am at 26 days porn and masturbation free, but the withdrawals have been crazy. He said, actually, I'd love for you to do a show on withdrawals. It would explain my recent mood swings. So I'm going to throw that out to my listserv to see who has studied actual withdrawals, because I can talk about some, but I don't profess to be an expert. Now, here is my issue. This man says, I'm in SAA, been there since 2010, and I have had four sponsors. My first sponsor never returned my calls. A second tried to talk me out of my Christian faith, and a third one I worked with decided he was no longer an addict. The fourth one I worked with quit calling me, and I finally gave up. Recently, I realized I wanted to complete the steps, but I need a sponsor for that. I wanted to ask you if you knew anyone or could point me in that direction. Simply, it is by God's grace that I made it to 26 days, and I want to keep advancing in my recovery. I got that several months ago, and I want to remind our listening audience, unfortunately, there are times when people in the 12-step program may not really be following the guidelines that SA and SAA give, and that is a shame. I mean, you know, this man said, I tried four sponsors. The first one didn't return his calls. That's unacceptable, inappropriate, and that person should never call himself a sponsor. The second one tried to talk me out of my Christian faith. Again, totally unacceptable. You are allowed to have any faith you want or not. You can be an atheist. You can be agnostic and still work this program. The third one decided he was no longer an addict. That can't be good sponsor material because once an addict, always an addict. You're either in or out of recovery. So shame on him. And the fourth one quit calling my listener. So obviously the listener says, what can you advise, Carol? And I happen to know that there are some great sponsors out there through telephone meetings. And so if you call some telephone meetings and say you're looking for a sponsor, I know of one sponsor who is no longer working. He's retired. And he has 40 sponsees, and he gives them 1 hour every week, just as if it was his job. So keep trying. I'm going to call this man Mike. Mike, keep calling. Look for a sponsor. You need a guide. You need a mentor. Or bring up the issue in your SAA group and say, I want to talk about the issue of sponsorship today. You know, you can't crosstalk, but you can clearly let people know what your issues are, what you're having trouble with. And then I say trust your higher power to get somebody to come over and bring you their phone number and say, hey, you can call me. So I hope you're still in major recovery. I know that it can be very, very tough. And I can't emphasize enough that you can't do it alone. You know, you might want to look for a workshop that goes through the 12 steps. That's another good way to get some active recovery. Because truly, you can't do it alone. You've got to have a committee. And a committee usually means a therapist who's skilled with sexual addiction and a sponsor. And the fellowship. And I say sponsor, but again, if you were doing Recovery Nation, you wouldn't have a sponsor, you'd have a coach. So, you know, it's really a guide to help you through this. And you have to really believe in your sponsor. Your sponsor needs to be able to give you good advice. And you'll know whether you're getting good advice or not. Trust that intuition of yours. No matter who I'm talking to out there. But don't do it alone, because my fear is you won't make it. It's not like stopping smoking or giving up drinking. You can't do it on your own. This is a process addiction, and that means when you're dealing with a process addiction that it's impossible to do it on your own. Now, I hope I get a couple of people who say, hey, I was able to do it. That will give me some faith. But I got to tell you, the general public cannot do it on their own. And you have to use the recovery tools. And you've heard me say before, at least 8 of the 10, and they are a CSAT, a Certified Sexual Addictions Therapist, group therapy, the 12-step program or any facsimile thereof, a guide, a mentor, or a sponsor. You need to make phone calls to your fellowship. You need to do spiritual readings, meditate, prayer. You need to do recovery readings. SA and the SAA book are wonderful for that. And if you're a sex and love addict, they have their own Bible, their own big book, as Bill W. would say, of Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to have healthy behaviors, and you may need filters for your computer or for your phone. So think about all those recovery tools and ask yourself honestly, how many of them do I practice a day? Okay, tonight we're excited to be interviewing a listener. Her name is Barb, and her story is really unusual, and I thought it would be very helpful to our listening audience to hear how she found sobriety, what she used to make that happen, and then being that she's a female sex addict, we're going to talk about how that might be different from male sex addicts. So I want to welcome Barb to the show. Barb, thank you so much for calling Sex Help with Carol the Coach. How are you? Okay, we have a little bit of a connection problem. Let's try it again. Barb, thank you for calling. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having
me. Excellent. Now, tell me a little bit about yourself and how your addiction got started. And if you would, if you're on a speaker, take yourself off and talk clearly through your cell phone, because cell phones have a little less of a connection than the landline. So give us some scoop. Tell us about you.
I guess I came to realize that I was a sex addict somewhere around 2004, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
But in hindsight, I've been addicted to sex my entire life. One of the things that I found out when I was in treatment was that I was very parent.
Boy, Barb, you are breaking up. I am going to ask you to call the show, and let's see if we can get a better connection. Just call back. And, again, you've got that number. So why don't you give us a call back, and let's try it again. Sometimes that happens. We get a bad connection. That's what the Internet's all about. Hope our listeners won't get discouraged as Barb calls back to give her story and how she found sobriety, because she actually had to go through treatment, which was way different than the average person. And yet some people really do need treatment. And when they need treatment, nothing else will work. They need that 30, 45, 60 days of intensive help to actually be able to heal some of the wounds so that they can be ready for their treatment with a therapist and their work in a 12-step group. And so I really appreciate the fact that obviously Barb was willing to do the hard work and get that done. Because I'll tell you what, this issue is rough. And she worked very, very diligently to get clean and sober. And you heard her say her sex addiction started way before she realized that she needed treatment. So she must be having trouble with her phone. She did drop, and I hope that she is calling back in. Because our number, if you have questions, is 646-595-3284. And we encourage anybody to call the show and ask questions. because that's what this show is all about. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about Barb. She has several children, and they mean the world to her. They're all adult children. She homeschooled them because she became ill with a thyroid disorder. She has a master's degree, and her husband is a practicing physician. So, obviously, she was living a life that some people would really, really want. She used to attend Sexaholic Anonymous 12-step meetings and actually had to make a 2-hour drive to get to the meetings and to get back. And so, you know, it was really, really difficult for her, but she made it her mission to get the treatment that she needed. And boy, that shows real dedication. Because let's face it, a lot of people say, I don't want to drive 20 minutes. I don't want to drive 30 minutes to a meeting. That's just too much work. And yet, what I know to be true is the more you invest in the meeting or getting to your therapist, the more you put the time into it, the better it is. And so, clearly, you know, I know that that may be resistance on your part if you're thinking about a meeting that's in another town, but it is what oftentimes needs to happen. And I really admire somebody who puts that kind of time in. They're going to make it happen when they're that dedicated. Now, Barb continued to attend SA meetings for about 5 or 6 years, even though she had the most affinity for a group called SAA, or Sex Addicts Anonymous. But the nearest meeting for her was 6 hours away. She has made it her mission to stay in touch with her original sponsor, which is great. And she's got the program down. She knows what to do. But she says, you know, it's a struggle. Sometimes she even will go to an AA or an NA meeting to be reminded about the 12-step principles. And that's what you can do. I remember the first time I worked with somebody, a referral from the hospital, and this man had an addiction, and it had caused him his job. He was a teacher, and he was looking at pornography while he was working. And after about 2 years of this, the IT department caught up with him. And not only did they find pornography, but they found child porn. And so he admitted himself to the nearest hospital because he really wanted to get some help. He knew he was going to jail. He said, I knew that. I just knew in my heart that was going to happen. And he felt like his child porn use was a result of being very curious about young men because he believed that he might have been a latent homosexual. He wasn't sure, and his curiosity was with young boys because he was very interested. That's when those questions started coming up for him in his own sexual development. Now, this man ended up going to jail for a few years, and because he was a teacher, he did his best to do 12-step work so that he could provide service to the men in prison. And, you know, he made the best of that situation. And You know, that's what I say that you always need to do. If you remember last week's show, we had Juan on. And Juan was a physician who had been caught looking at pornography. And he made it his mission to get clean and sober and recover. And then he became a recovery coach. And if you listen to several shows back, there was Doug Weiss, who trains people who have some good recovery to actually to become recovery coaches so that they can feel good about themselves and they can give back. Because really, that's what this is all about. Once you work on yourself, and that typically takes 3 to 5 years. You know, this is not just an illness of not having enough discipline, not pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and just white-knuckling it. This is a neurochemical brain disorder. And this brain disorder needs 3 to 5 years to actually develop some new neural pathways. That's why it is so important for most people to practice healthy behaviors and to not spend a lot of time in what we call the middle circle. You know, there in SAA, they have the three circles. And the inner circle are those deal-breaking behaviors, those behaviors that would get you into a lot of trouble. You know, that may be prostitution. That may be multiple affairs. That might be pornography. That might be voyeurism or exhibitionism. And, you know, when you think about it, there is no doubt that it's imperative to not light up the brain in the same way. And when you don't light up the brain in the same way, when you create new kind of ruts in if you will, the neurocircuitry, you have a better chance of it, not extinguishing, but clearly strengthening old habits die, and then you strengthen new habits. And that's very, very important. And that means that you can't fire up the neurons in the same way. Does that make sense? And so the middle circle behaviors might look like looking at a Victoria's Secret or looking up or Googling menage a trois or activating words, images, fantasies. And so when somebody says, well, you know, I just looked up transsexuals that were prostitutes. I didn't call them. I explained to them, hey, that lights up your brain in just the same way. That is not a healthy choice. And so that's the middle circle. It may not be the behaviors that you think are really cheating on your wife or husband, but if they activate that reward center, they really should not be toyed with. You shouldn't be dabbling with that at all. And I highly recommend that you take a look at your middle circle behaviors and get honest with yourself. Is that a way to keep this pornography, perhaps, addiction going? Because you are looking at Playboys or you are looking at Victoria's Secrets or you are Googling women in bathing suits, you know, whatever. And then that outer circle are all the healthy behaviors that create new neural pathways in the brain. That may be spending time with your kids and really being in the moment and enjoying them for who they are and what they do. That may mean exercise, because we know exercise produces dopamine in a healthy way, unless, of course, it becomes a real compulsion. That may mean date night with your husband or your wife and having fun together and really figuring out, what do we need to feel like we're a team again? I know that most women want that more than anything from their spouses. And when their spouses are sex addicts, they want safety, connection, and trust. And certainly healthy circle behaviors are important in developing that. And that's why I really encourage you to work on those healthy circle behaviors. Now, it looks like maybe Barb's phone gave out. And she had asked, she had actually come up with some questions that she thought would be interesting for our listening audience. And some of them we've actually talked about already. I mean, one of the questions she asked is, how can you be an atheist and still be in recovery? And as in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, or NA, Narcotics Anonymous, or any 12-step group, your higher power, which is how the books refer to that spirituality, your higher power may be your 12-step group. You know, it's whatever keeps you sober, recovered, that you can depend on, that won't fail you. I do think that being an atheist makes it harder. And maybe I can get one of my clients to talk about how he has gotten around that, because he sure doesn't want to be talked into spirituality in form of religion. But he says, I could not be recovered today if it weren't for my frequent 12-step groups. And when he first got out of treatment, he went to 90 meetings in 90 days and then did it again, went to another 90 meetings in 90 days. And right now I'm working with a gentleman. I'm consulting with him. I am not providing therapy, but I'm getting him to the right resources and helping him with Facing the Shadows, probably the best workbook on how to get healthy. And he, too, says, you know, I don't believe in organized religion at all. I really believe in the program, though. I am going to lots and lots of recovery groups. And so, you know, that is his medicine of choice. And it's very, very helpful. So I would encourage anybody to bring that up in their 12-step meetings. Because when you feel like you're going to have a problem with something that's occurring in your 12-step group, you want to be able to talk about it. Now, again, there is no crosstalk, which means Sam can't make a statement, and then Joe answers it, and then Tom comments on it, and then Bill comments on that. You go around the circle, and everybody gets a chance to talk about the topic and how it applies to their life. And oftentimes, in that group, they will ask, does anybody have a topic they'd like to bring up? So that can be very helpful, too. When the next question Barb asked is, isn't sex addiction just an excuse for men who cheat? And, you know, that is the prevailing philosophy of a lot of people that don't know any better. You know, I was talking about an interview I did on a news segment where a woman that was about 60 miles away from where I work was a teacher's aide. And she was married to a man who was had a fairly important position in the community. And she got on Snapchat and Instagram and solicited young boys and said to them, you know, I want to teach you about oral sex. And she had a whole list of young men that were interested in that. So this woman was a predator. She was participating in a sex crime. And she would literally go to the school after school, pick these kids up, teach them about certain sex acts, and then drop them back off. It was so apparent that this was not a woman who was abusing a younger child for a relationship. She was a female predator. And because it was a woman who was orienting boys to different sexual experiences, there were so many people that responded to the news story and talked to the newscaster and said, wow, I wish that had happened in my school. I would have given anything to have had that occur. And this journalist was so angry that we have this go-for-it attitude when it's older females and younger boys. And I would agree with that. It's that same mentality is that isn't sex addiction just an excuse for men to cheat? You know, no, sex addiction is about compulsion. Sex addiction is about men and women who attempt to stop and can't. Sex addiction is about destroying lives and destroying one's integrity. It is not about exploiting somebody and everybody living happily ever after. Because what I explained to the journalist as well as to a neighbor I was talking to last night, I said, you know, these young kids brain lock in on that memory and then either look for opportunities to recreate it or never feel good about sexuality because they realize that what happened to them wasn't normal. Okay. Can marriages survive sexual addiction? Well, yes, they can. And so many of them do. I was just talking to a woman this morning, and I said to her, you know, I meet women and men whose spouse cheats on them once. And when that typically happens, they're one foot in the marriage and they're one foot out. If it happens again, they're usually out of there. And yet, you know, I've got lots and lots and lots of partners who, when their husband or wife has sexual addiction, they very clearly hang in there with the addict. And they realize that it's an illness. And it really does make that vow through sickness and in health mean something very important. And so my partner that I was talking to, she was like, I can't even believe it. I can't believe, what's wrong with us as partners? And I said, I don't think there is anything wrong. You know, we want to teach couples how they can repair their marriage and have a better marriage than they ever thought they could. And we want to keep couples together unless somebody is being hurt over and over and over again. And if that's the case, then that's a form of abuse, and we want them out of there. One of the questions that Barb asked, because she thought the listening audience would want to know, how weird is it sitting in a 12-step meeting with a bunch of male sex addicts? And my experience with female sex addicts is that, you know, it is uncomfortable to sit with male sex addicts initially. And yet, after several meetings, they realize that they all are suffering from the same affliction, and they lose that sense of differentness. Now, I got to be honest. Oftentimes, the men are more uncomfortable with it than the women. And they're uncomfortable with it typically for two reasons. One is, they realize that they have spent their whole life objectifying. And so they don't want to talk about doing that and make the female sex addict feel bad. Okay? So they have empathy for their fellowship, and there is reservation on their part to really talk about what's going on for fear that it will make female sex addict uncomfortable. That's the first issue. The second issue is, and I'm sure if I've got partners listening to this show tonight, especially because they thought they were going to understand about female sex addicts, partners oftentimes don't trust their husbands. And so their fear is that if their husband's in the recovery and he sits next to a female sex addict, that it will trigger him to want to act out with her, and that 12-step groups will no longer be safe. Now, has this ever happened? Oh, probably. But that's certainly what's happened in AA groups and NA groups, too. The truth of the matter is, when somebody's working their program, they would never exploit another person in fellowship. And that they should be on a spiritual journey that wouldn't allow for that and would not fantasize about that, therefore it would not happen. And so Barb's other question was, I would think your listening audience would want to know, have a lot of guys hit on me? Meaning, of course, have they expressed interest? And unfortunately, she can't answer that one. But I know that that does not happen. At least it doesn't. It's not a commonplace experience. Does it happen occasionally? Oh, I'm sure it does. Because we're all human beings, and unfortunately, sex addicts are just practicing healthy boundaries. And so they probably, some of them would have problems with this. But my general rule of thumb is that most sex addicts have a real understanding for and a real respect for other addicts, be them male or female, and would never take advantage of that or cross that boundary. However, that being said, I truly encourage my female sex addicts to create groups on their own. And the reason being is that it's typically, it's a safer environment. They really can't say anything. They don't worry about a male judging them. And it takes the sexuality out of it. And so that is my belief, that females really need to work diligently to start their own meetings, to have separate meetings. It's just a better way to go about it. Now, there are different types of meetings. You've heard me say there's Sexaholics Anonymous, and there's and that's called SA, and there's SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, and there's a little bit of a different spin in both of those groups, and I would encourage you to try both to see which one feels the best for you. Sex Addicts Anonymous tends to, because they have the three circles, they tend to typically they use the three circles to determine what behaviors are healthy and what aren't. And Sexaholics Anonymous, SA, they tend to be more rigid, and they don't have, their boundaries are stricter. Now, the other thing is, there is SLAA, and that's Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. And that is a really specialized group for people that fall in love a lot and then may use sex as part of that issue. That may end up being a part of the addiction, but so is the love. And those meetings are fewer and further between. And unfortunately, I have to say, we need more of those meetings around, especially for women. Now, when is it good to go to residential treatment? You know, when a sex addict has tried and tried and tried and been unsuccessful in maintaining recovery, that's a great time to get into residential treatment and to get out of your environment and to get in a healthy environment and really work on the traumas that have occurred in your life. Or if you know that you've been sexually abused or sexually exploited, maybe you were physically and emotionally abused and you have a lot of dark wounds that you use sex to medicate, and you know, outpatient therapy isn't intensive enough to heal those wounds, that's another really good time to use a residential treatment center. And more treatment centers are beginning to take insurance, and I'm so thrilled about that. Because usually there's a co-occurring mental health issue like depression or anxiety or obsessive compulsive behavior. And the treatment center can bill under that and do a lot of the core issue family of origin work, and as a result get to the crux of maybe your drinking issue or sex addiction. So, you know, that's something to always ask at the time of intake. And an intake is when you make that initial call to see if that's the right place for you. And let's face it, with the internet, you can see what the programming is like. And then it really does matter how you're treated at the time of intake. And an intake worker should be able to answer most of your questions and figure out, will your insurance pay if you're lucky enough to have insurance? And they're supposed to be able to refer you to other centers that do take insurance if they don't. And so, you know, you make the call and then you ask the professionals to do some of the work. And that is how that whole situation plays itself out. Now, next week, we're going to be talking with Deborah Schiller. Believe it or not, we're both going to be working on Labor Day, providing the show. A lot of times on a holiday, I will run a favorite repeat show. But she was nice enough. She is the director of the Gratitudes Program at Pine Grove. And she said, no, that would be a perfect time for me to talk about the gratitude program and to talk about Ashley Madison and talk about what is this compulsion for people where their relationships are never good enough. Now, I say that, and yet I tell my partners all the time, you know, when your husband or wife cheats on you, this is not about you not being good enough. This is not about sex not being good enough. This is the addict's choice to look elsewhere for sexual behaviors that medicate his or her wounds. Does that make sense? So I'm not saying that in a marriage there might not be some sexual problems. I'm not saying that in a marriage somebody who is very controlling and puts the addict down, you know, for the way they parent or the way they fold their socks or the way they provide. I'm not saying that that doesn't contribute towards the issues that have helped to escalate the sexual addiction. But truly, we always talk about an addict is 100% responsible for their own behavior. And I believe that wholeheartedly. As a matter of fact, I wrote about that. For the mainstream person, I wrote about what is sexual addiction and how is that different than any other issue you have in your marriage. And one of the components of that article was talking about being 100% responsible for your behavior. Because as long as you blame somebody else for the issues that you have, you're not going to get healthy. And that is just the way it is. You're not. And so how do you take 100% responsibility for yourself and still entertain the fact that, you know, if you're married, if you're living with somebody, if you're in relationship with somebody, there are things that are probably going to trigger you. Absolutely. And that's a coaching principle that I ascribe to, is being 100% responsible for your behavior. It is the number one coaching principle that I work with everybody. Because I want them, and myself included, if I'm not the right weight, I don't want to blame my age. I don't want to blame my body type. I don't want to blame my husband. I don't want to blame work. You know, unfortunately, a lot of teachers can tend to be heavy because there is a lot of food available to them 24 hours a day. You know, and they say, I can't lose weight because it is everywhere. Well, you've got to figure out how do you become 100% responsible for your behavior so that you deal with those triggers that are around you every single day. And let's face it, that's an issue for everybody, whether you're an addict or not. But I love that. I love knowing that I'm 100% responsible. And that's where a therapist can really help you brainstorm how to get out of cycles and how to get in a healthy environment. And, you know, so that you aren't blaming somebody else, you're taking charge for your own behavior. And that is Therapy 101. Okay. So, I hope that I've helped to make things clearer for you. I can't wait to talk with Deb Schiller next week, because anything that says the gratitude program is intriguing to me. You've heard me say it before. If you want to be happy, just in general, you want to increase your happiness factor, you have to have three things in your life. The first is you need to stay in the moment. And what I mean by that is that you have to get better at focusing in on what is happening right in your own life. Does that make sense? That, you know, you can't be attentive to your spouse if you're thinking about the laundry, if you're thinking about your work environment, if you're thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. You got to learn how to focus, and that's really tough for us because, you know, we got these cell phones that are sending us texts and emails and blah, 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 and we have games that have taught us how to look for one screen and then the next and the next and the next. And if you got a porn addiction, you've trained your brain to do that too. So staying in the moment is so imperative. The second factor in creating happiness is having gratitude. And that means looking at your life and asking yourself what is going right, as opposed to focusing on what is going wrong. And then the third thing that I want you to do is I want you to learn the art of reframing. And when you use reframing, it's like framing a picture. You look at the situation that's troublesome and has obstacles, and you ask yourself, how can I grow from this situation, and how am I stronger? And when you do that, you take yourself out of the victim role, and you gain knowledge, and you gain experience, and you no longer are a victim to your circumstance. So those three things really contribute to happiness. And you know, I'm going to end the show on that. I want you to feel happy. So this week I'm going to give you the assignment to work on those three factors. And again, they are staying in the moment. So when you catch yourself going, okay, what's on my to-do list? You stop yourself and say, no, I'm going to enjoy my two-year-old as he giggles and jumps on me and yells, daddy, daddy, daddy. Two, you're going to have gratitude. You're going to be grateful for what is. You're going to look at what's working and not what isn't. And three, you're going to use reframing. Any obstacle that occurs during the week, you know, you think you bounced a check, you're running out of gas, your boss has yelled at you, your husband didn't come home on time, your wife is being critical, whatever that is, you say, okay, now how can I grow stronger? That may mean that you say to yourself, you know, I am going to tell myself I am strong, I am loyal, I am loving, I am dedicated, I am smart. And you're going to figure out what it takes to self-soothe and improve that sense of happiness. Okay, well, we'll see you next week for Labor Day. And if we don't see you, if you're out having fun, good for you. But make sure to download the show. Deb Schiller is going to be talking about the Gratitude Program. And that is at Pine Grove. I so appreciate you listening tonight. I'm sorry Barb had a bad connection. But you know what? It gave you and me time to be together. And that's what it's all about. Now, get this. It's about intimacy. And intimacy is having a close connection with somebody, and that does not have to be sexual. That can be closeness with your teenage son or daughter. That can be closeness with your puppy. That can be closeness to your sibling. That can be closeness to your therapist or your radio talk show host. Well, you're listening to Carol the Coach. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets. This is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Go to my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach, and feel free to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com if you have any questions. And as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. I so appreciate you and your strengths. Why don't you identify five of them and carry those with you for the rest of the week. We'll talk with you next time.